All right, I think that was pretty good timing. I think if I've done this correctly, Bobby Osborne, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir. Sure I am.
How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great for who I am. I'm getting along fine and still did the opera last night. Still working working road shows and I'm just thankful to be able to do it this long as I have. So I'm doing great.
You're never going to stop, are you?
No, I don't plan on stopping. I mean, I really feel like I was born to do what I'm doing right now, and I've been doing it for a little over 60 years, so wow. I can't see no point in giving it up now. So.
You know, I told you right before we went on the air, Bobby called. Good timing, right in the middle of Sourwood Mountain, the phone rang, and I will say this for you, Bobby Osborne is punctual. My phone, he was going to call at 3:00. And I know sometimes it's hard for people to make calls, and I just kind of give a little leeway. But Bobby Osborne was right on the button, right at 3:00, perfect timing.
Well, I try to be. I write it down on my desk where I can see what's happened on the calendar too. I just write it down, and that way I don't forget it.
Well, I appreciate it. Of course, I've always wanted to chat with you, but I was more motivated when I saw that you're coming up to my neck of the woods. You're coming to Turfway Park next Friday, the 20th, uh-huh. And you're bringing the Rocky Top Express, and that's just like, you know, 10 minutes from where I live. And I thought, well, I ought to talk to Bobby now. That's good motivation to see what he's up to with the Rocky Top Express. So I'm thrilled you're going to be nearby so I can go see you.
Well, I'm still traveling, of course, and I have the full band, you know, and so I'll be there, and we'll be doing some of the older songs that my brother and me put out. You know, every time I go anywhere and open my mouth, the Osborne brothers come to their mind, you know, because we're still together so long. But I shall be there, and I hope to have a nice crowd and a bunch of, we'll do a bunch of the older songs that we have to request and instrumentals and what have you. So I'm looking forward to it.
I was telling Bobby before we went on the air that in the first 20-30 minutes of the program I played from the new album, New Bluegrass, the newest album, I will say, the New Bluegrass and Old Heartaches, I played Born in Kentucky. And being born in Kentucky, for me, I almost stood up. I mean, that was, you did that so well. And you were telling me about who wrote the song, Living in Frankfurt, right when I had to run out of time.
Yeah, Greg Priest is his name. He lived over in Lawrenceburg, but I think he's moved up to Frankfurt now. He's a great songwriter. I have some more songs that he's written, you know, and so, but I like that one there suited me pretty good, Born in Kentucky.
Oh, man, it was great. It was great. And it's just like you, of course, you've always had. I made some promotional comments about you coming on the show, and I'll say this now, not to butter you up for any reason, but I just don't think there's ever been the equal of Bobby Osborne's voice. I just don't think it's existed.
Well, it's been good to me, and I'm just born to do that, I guess. I was given the voice and given the talent. It was up to me. I feel like that to make use of it, and I feel like that I have for all these years. And next year, I'll be celebrating my 50th anniversary with the Grand Ole Opry.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to that. You know, when I got up to about 43 years, I'd been there. I got to thinking, man, I've got a shot at 50 years. I didn't think I'd ever have a chance for that, you know. But I got up to been about 43 years. And I think, man, I've got a good chance of making 50. So next year will be the day, and they're planning kind of all their people that's been there 50 years or longer. Well, they always have a celebration for them there at the Opry. So I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Bobby, do you have a date for that yet? I mean, that might be something worth to go down to.
I was made a member on August the 8th of 1964, and next year during that the month of August is my homecoming celebration down in Hyde, so that's on the 8th. So we moved it up to August the 2nd. It'll be I believe it's on a Saturday night. It'll be August the 2nd, 2014 is when and I'll celebrate that.
Boy, that'll be something to... I might have to put that on my calendar. So you're off, but maybe if I start planning now, I can make it down there, because that would be a huge event, 50 years, just to witness someone who'd been on that.
Yeah, Jim Ed Brown, just a couple of weeks ago, they celebrated his 50th year, and I told him, of course, you don't keep up with things like that. I told him, I said, I can't believe that you beat me here by a year. he came there just almost to the day of 1 year before that I came to the Opry, and he's still going and strong, and he's got his voice is hanging in there with him, and I'm just really proud. I never thought that I'd ever reach that goal, you know. But the Grand Ole Opry has been my life as far as music's concerned. I listened to the Opry when I was just old enough to know that there was a Grand Ole Opry, and my dream. All time, well, I was to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry, and it happened in 1964. I've just been very thankful for that. It's been one of the most important things, I guess, that's ever happened to me in my whole lifetime.
Do you, Bobby, can I ask you a little bit about when that occurred and the circumstances of how you and the Osborne brothers were brought into the Grand Ole Opry family?
Well, we were recording for MGM Records, and Ruby was the first recording that came out on MGM Records in 1956, I believe, and it did real well and got a lot of airplay, and down through the years it's been one of the signature songs that I get requests for all the time. But we stayed with MGM for it was about 7 years. We recorded 60 sides for them, and we got to the point where we were just on a straight line. We weren't going up or down, neither one, and we wanted the Grand Ole Opry. This was before the Opry, of course. And we tried our best to get on the Opry, and finally one night was being a guest there, and one night Paul Wilbur of the Wilbur Brothers came up, and he reached me a card. He said, if you ever change your mind, he says, give me a call. Well, I held that little card in my billfold for a long time, and Sonny and me, we were up in Delaware playing a club up there all week long, and we were checking in at a motel. We were just sitting, talking, wondering if we ought to quit or keep going or what we should do, because we were just playing clubs all the time. We wanted something more. There's nothing wrong with clubs, but we wanted something more than that, you know. When we went to the Grand Ole Opry, but we didn't know how to do it. But anyway, Sonny said, let me have that card. It must have been about 9 or 10 at night or something like that. And Sonny got that number and called Doyle Wilbur. I mean, it's right out of the clear blue sky. And Doyle told him, he says, well, give me a week and call me back next. It's on Wednesday. And he says, call me back next Wednesday. And he said, I'll maybe have some news for you. Well, the following Wednesday, while we were in Columbus a while, playing a club there, and Sonny called Doyle Wilbur back, and he said, well, he said, what I've got you so far, he said, I've got you a guest spot on the Opry that week, I've got you a guest spot on the week, and he said, I think I've got you a Decca recording contract set up. So, boy, that just that sounded awful good to us. So they put us back in high gear again. So, and we signed with the Wilbur Brothers. At that time, they had a talent agency, and then they had their publishing company and all that, and Surefire Music. And so we went ahead and signed with them and left Acuff Rose. And we told Noel, we told him we wanted the Grand Ole Opry. He says, you give me some time, he said, and I'll see that we can see what we can do for that. So 11 months later, why, we were, oh goodness, we were up east somewhere playing, and he called and he said, it was maybe middle of the week or something like that, and he said, I need you all here Friday if you can make it. He says, because I've got you set up to be members of the Grand Ole Opry. And boy, the bottom fell out right then. Mm. So, and we come. That was August the August the first part of August that we met there with Mr. John Devine and Noel Wilburn, and we were signed to the Opry that day, and we got to do the Friday night Opry that night, and then the Saturday night Opry. We had to go somewhere that following day. So the following week, which was August the 8th, on Saturday, they asked us to come back to now make the announcement at the Opry that we were the newest members of the Grand Ole Opry. And at that time, we became the 51st member of the Grand Ole Opry at that time. And so that was one of the biggest events that we had ever been a part of in our lifetime, you know, it has to be members of the Grand Ole Opry. But that's, just in a few words, that's how it happened.
Just if people have just tuned in, I'm very happy to be talking to Bobby Osborne. I just kind of touched on their entrance into the Grand Ole Opry because Bobby said that next year will be his 50th anniversary, and they're going to have a special celebration for him in August of 2014. So if I catch you right, then you and Sonny were sitting around thinking that we need to find something else to do. Now, this is after Ruby was a phenomenal success. You had some other songs that got decent play, but still at that point you thought, we're going to find something else to do. You were not tired of playing clubs, but you wanted something different. So it actually had reached that point where you're sitting around thinking, maybe we shouldn't do this anymore. Am I right?
Well, yeah. Right before that, we were discussing the fact whether we should just go on or quit and go to work somewhere and get us a job and whatever. And I did that a couple of times before all that happened. I quit and got me a job and went to work and got a job driving a bread truck.
Where were you driving a bread truck?
In Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
We lived there at the time and moved there from Kentucky, of course. And so I got a job driving that bread truck, and I ran off 28 pounds trying to deliver bread and rolls to people, but I quit that job. And my dad got me a job at National Cash Register, where he worked, and retired there, too, by the way. So I worked there about 18 months, and, boy, I got tired of that. And me and Sonny, we got a gentleman in Dayton, Ohio, had a nightclub there, and he asked us to come down there and play. We didn't have anything else to do on weekends, so we went and got started back to play again in the clubs there in Dayton, and I was working at National Cash Register. Well, when I quit that, we'd worked a day or two out on the road because of our popularity we had with MGM Records, but anyway, I quit that job at the National Cash Register. I went and got me a job driving a cab in Dayton, Ohio. You know, a lot of people don't believe me when I say this, but that was my favorite job I ever had.
Cab driver in Dayton, really?
Yeah.
Why? Why was that?
Well, it was the Yellow Cab Company. All they wanted. They wanted that car on the street all the time. As long as that car was on the street, that's what mattered. And you could go, and if you didn't want to make any money, you could go and park the thing somewhere and sit, and not try to get any drive around downtown. They had some stations down there, just drive around, try to get some people to take home or whatever, you know. So, but you could, if you wanted to sit still, well, you could just do that as long as that car was on the street. But I don't know. And I got a job driving a car time, so you could get off anytime. So by them, as long as that car, I could get anybody to drive for me if I wanted to, you know. And people would always, I finally asked them to get to drive at the airport. And that was real. When you drove up there, you hauled people that was well dressed all the time, and they wouldn't. They were businessmen, you know, yeah, coming in and out of the thing. So right. I enjoyed that. So anybody I could get to fill in for me if I wanted to have a day off, why, they would be glad to do that. As long as my car was on the street, that was okay. But I did that, and I did that for a long time. And I tell you, I love that job. You could work it as you please. Nobody told you what to do all the time, and you're just as long as you just had when they called you to go get a trip, you just go do that. And everything was fine. But I liked that job. That's what I was doing when we got to be members of the Opry.
Really?
I dreaded to quit, but I had.
You could have retired from Yellow Cab by now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh,
good. Hey, listen, I've heard the story before about when you went on to the radio station. Was it Moon Mullins? Was it one of his stations where you went in and sang Ruby? Or who was that? What am I thinking?
Oh, it was at Middletown, Ohio.
Middletown, mm-hmm.
This man lived, I'd never been in front of a crowd. I'd been singing around the house trying to learn how to sing, you know. And this man, my uncle was a guitar player, my mom's brother. He played like Merle Travis. Well, he had gotten in touch, got tangled up with this one guy somewhere along the line, but the guy found out that I could sing in this, and he come over to our house one day, and me and a couple other guys were singing there in the living room, and he said, if I got you a spot down in Middletown, which is about 30 miles, I guess, from Dayton, but he said, I know where this little jamboree down in Middletown. He said, WPFB has it on their farm out there. And he said, if you'd like to, he said, I know some people down there. So I can get you. If you want to go down there Saturday night and play, he said, I can get you. I can get that done for you. I said, man, I'd be afraid to get up in front of anybody because I can't sing with a nickel. And he said, I think you'd do all right. Anyway. I was wanting to get into that anyway because I'd been listening to the Opry and Ernest Tubb was at that time he was my favorite, you know. So I said okay. So me and the other two guys, we went down. We only knew about three songs. That's about all we knew, you know. And Ruby, I didn't know it. I had never sung Ruby in my lifetime. I mean, even with those guys. So we go down there and we sung a song called "Summertime Is Past and Gone," which was a Bill Monroe song. We got such an applause from it. While the guy in the crowd wants to do another, I told him, he said, you got to do another. And I said, I don't know no more. He said, you got to do something. And really, it was a song that I don't know if you ever remember hearing about a lady by the name of Cousin Emmy and her kinfolks. Way back there years ago, she was a member of the Renfrew Valley Barn Dance and a member of the Opry one time. She had the song out, Ruby, on a jukebox, and it was playing. It played all the time in my hometown of Hyden down there. So I listened to it. Back then, it was just a little cafe and just one door in, one way in, one way out. So the door stayed open all the time, no air conditioning. So I just turned it by listening to it. So down there in Middletown, this guy said, you got to sing another. Well, Ruby's the only thing I could think of that I knew any words to. I said, well, I know that one called Ruby. And he said, well, get out there and sing it. Huh? And I did. And, of course, when I did that, well, some guy from the manager of the radio station, he came down. They had that broadcast at the time. They broadcasted around that part of Ohio, you know.
Sure. So
this guy run down there and he said, who in the world sung that stupid song Ruby a while ago? And I said, well, it was me. He says, well, get out there and sing it again. People call in, so they're going to turn the radio off if you don't sing it again. So get out there and sing it again.
Go out and sing that stupid song again.
He said, that's the stupidest song ever was. Why everybody likes that, I don't know. But I got out there and sang it again. And boy, I tell you, I was glad to get gone from that. I was shaking so bad. I was a nervous wreck. But That was a story, but in itself, right there. Of course, that story, I'll never forget that one, you know.
You know, so many, and I'll just tell you this. I happen to think when it's all said and done, the Osborne Brothers, what you did as a band for the length of your career together and the quality after quality after quality of the recordings and the performances, I happen to think when it's all said and done, the Osborne Brothers will be the most remembered, revered, influential bluegrass band in history. That's just my personal opinion. I've always felt that way. And as you listen now to new bands, how many bands now come out with a record where almost all of them cover an Osborne Brothers tune? And when they try to do Ruby, I think don't do it. Don't. When I see great singers live, and there are a lot of great singers. I'm not saying there aren't, but when they try to do Ruby live, I just think, oh, don't go there. That's Bobby's. That's the Osborne Brothers. That's Bobby's vocal. Don't try to touch it. It's such a piece of history at this point.
Well, I feel real blessed by having a voice like that. Eddie Stubbs down here at the at Nashville has the All Night Show and announces the Opry, and
right.
So many people have tried to sing like me. That's got a high voice, you know. A lot of people thought because of Bill Monroe, he had a high voice, you know. And a lot of people thought and would ask me, "Did you learn anything from Bill Monroe?" Well, there was a fiddle player one time that played with Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. He told me, he said, you know, he said, I want to tell you something. He said, you can take it here how you want to. And he said, here he was working with Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, and we played a show with him up in West Virginia where I was at. So he said, if I had a voice like yours, I would never be caught singing a Bill Monroe song or Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs song. Mm. I thought, man, coming from a fiddle player, that sounds funny, you know. And so, I kind of took him at his word, and I quit singing as many of their songs. And I started singing Sleeping at the Foot of the Bed, Jimmy Dickens songs, and Ernest Tubbs songs. But the only thing I did, I just sung about 8 notes higher than they did, you know.
Right.
And so that kind of got me into singing country songs. And I've always loved country music along with bluegrass. And so I just kept doing that and doing it. And finally, one time, remember Hank Thompson? I listened to him, his records one time, and he had the clearest and said his words so clear. I never heard him. I've got every album he ever put out, you know. But I thought myself, there is what I have to say my words like. But that man there is crystal clear with his voice and his pronunciation of words, and so. That's when I started doing, saying my words real plain, and it gave me another sound from what a lot of people had. And I never tried my best. I never tried anything to ever imitate Bill Monroe or Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. Sonny learned from Earl's banjo playing, but I think that Earl Scruggs took the banjo he took it to one level. And when Sonny come along, he took it to another level.
No,
you know?
No question about it.
But it suited what we were doing, you know. It really matched what we were doing. And but a lot of people thought that I got what I did from Bill Monroe. But I knew I had a unique voice, and I understood that compared to other people that I'd heard. So I just hung right with that. And when Sonny got to playing the banjo, and we got to singing with the harmony that we come across. With that song Once More, that was the first song we used that harmony on.
Which was it, Bobby?
The old recording of Once More.
Once More, okay.
It was on MGM Records, and we came across that song there, and we knew that we had that arrangement. We were riding along in a car, and Sonny, me, and Red Allen, we were just trying to sing that song. And all of a sudden, I don't know why, I just started singing it in a higher register, the lead part. And Red was a tenor singer when he came with us, so he just switched off and started singing the tenor, but really in a low octave lower than what I would. So when we got to singing that song, we knew right there that we had something that we'd never heard before. I'd never heard any that kind of harmony before, so we stopped and got the guitar. It was in the trunk. We was on our way to Wheeling, West Virginia to Dayton, Ohio. And in February, that is cold weather. We just sang along in the car, you know. But he stopped, got the guitar out of the trunk, brought it up, and we wanted to make sure we never forgot what we did, you know. So, and we hung on to that. Finally got a chance to record Once More for MGM Records, and it did pretty well. It was the next good one we had since Ruby, you know. So, we knew we had something there, and when Sonny come along, we we added the three parts and put three part harmonica, just everything that we knew, and hit people like the Lubin Brothers had great harmony with two of the Wilburn Brothers and lots of people, you know. And but we had just added that third part, and it made us different from anything else in bluegrass or country, anything.
Different, Bobby, and just spectacular. I mean, and when I say people cover Osborne Brothers tunes, they should, because they're great tunes, and you've all made them. You've made them such a part of our lives, but they cannot do. They try to do that harmony. It's not the same, and the instrumentation is not the same. First of all, Sonny, I think, in my opinion, is unparalleled as a banjo player. I think your mandolin playing is. I think your vocals were so strong. People forget that first of all, you could play several instruments. Correct? I mean, you played double banjo with Sonny on some recordings.
I sure did on the original cut of Ruby. I played that the two banjos is what got us that contract, mm-hmm. and the song Ruby that got us that recording contract. And because Wesley Rose, he wanted to hear, we sent him a demo of Sonny and a guy by the name of Noel Crace of playing the two banjos, you know, and they were just messing around with it. I'd never seen anybody play two banjos together, have that role going together, you know, but they was messing around with that song, and we sent that demo to Wesley Rose at MGM, and he immediately said, that's what I want right there. So we were in like Flint with MGM to record, you know, and so first major label that we ever had. So anyway, about maybe a month or something like that, before we went down to record, Noah just disappeared off the face of the earth. We didn't know whatever happened to him. So this is a true story too. But
has he ever surfaced since?
Yeah.
Good.
A couple of years later, he surfaced again. But he just disappeared, and we couldn't. Sonny reached me and said a picture. I knew what went on with the band. I'd heard Earl so much, and Sonny. I knew what went on back there with your picks and everything, with the rolls and your three-finger style. So Sonny reached me a set of picks. He said, well, you might as well get busy. So we got to have that contract. And I got busy trying to play Ruby and all that right there with the band. So we got it worked out like we recorded. And we went down there and never told Wesley nothing about the switch from that guy to me or anything like that who played on the demo. And we never mentioned it, I think, in the world. But we didn't say anything about that. So I played the banjo down there, and Wesley thought that was the other guy, I guess. So we got the contract, and that's what we wanted. But
so you got ready for that in a couple months?
Yeah, about a month or two. I'd been fooling with the banjo just a little bit, but not enough to. No, I'd never been in front of anybody playing it just by myself, you know. But it was a half two case, and I got busy and learned to play Ruby.
that's amazing. Why did you pick up a mandolin when you did? Why has that become the instrument identified with Bobby Osborne?
Well, the fiddle has always been my favorite instrument. My dad had a guitar and a fiddle around the house all the time, and I love the fiddle, and I love them old tunes of Sally Gooden and Far on the Mountain and all them that people played, you know. I just love them old tunes, and I had a fiddle and I fooled with it for a long time, but I just loved it, and so I'm still playing the guitar, and when I got into singing, I found out that you could play rhythm on a fiddle and sing. So I heard that mandolin that was tuned like a fiddle. We had eight strings instead of four, so I got that. I was good with the flat pick. I had no problem with that. So, and I was having trouble with the bow also with the fiddle. But anyway, I just picked up a mandolin and I liked that as well as I did the fiddle. So I laid down the guitar and started playing that mandolin. I never looked back no more. and that's how the mandolin thing came along. I just learned all them fiddle tunes. I just transferred one on the guitar right over to the mandolin.
Okay.
And that made my style a little bit different than Monroe. I tried to play like Bill Monroe one time, but he showed me in about a minute and a half, and I couldn't do that, and I've never tried it no more. So that's how I got to play the mandolin.
You have a very distinctive style, like I'm anyone that anybody would pay attention to, I just think your playing was overshadowed by the power of your singing. I mean, I think that your mandolin playing is
possibly
just...
so, because nobody never say, "Boy, I want you to play the mandolin." They just don't want to hear me sing. That's all they want to hear me do. I was happy with that. That's what I wanted to do anyway. So
it worked out well for you so far.
Yeah, it sure did. It sure did.
Oh, boy, this is incredible.
My boy told me, said, "Hey, Mark, won't you on the phone?" I said, "What?"
That's how I get everybody, Bobby. I just always tell him who I am first, and then he knew better than that, because when I talked to him, I said it's not the actor, and he was fine with that. So he was pulling your leg if he thought it was.
Well, you know, Steve came down to Opry and played one night. He hung around with Earl Scruggs quite a bit, so I met him one time down there, but. And he's a nice guy. So
he is a nice guy.
I thought, well, man, what in the world would Steve Martin want me to call him for?
Well,
then finally my boy told me, he said, well, he got the same name as Steve.
I got his number. You want it? I give it to you off the air. He's been on this show. Steve Martin's been on this show. Yeah, we did double. You guys did double banjos. We did double Steve Martin's on this show back in May.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was on for about an hour. Great. I really enjoyed talking to him. Just very sincere, very very serious about music, and knows his place and wants to do well, and loves bluegrass. The man loves bluegrass, but a very, very sincere guy.
He doesn't. He's got all kinds of banjos. He's following bluegrass. I think probably he's kind of like Buck Owens told me one time. Buck Owens told me, he said, man, he said, if I could have played bluegrass and sung it, he said, that's what I would have done. But he said, I ended up, and he said, I could sing country better than I could bluegrass and play better. So
really?
That's how it come me to be in country music instead of bluegrass. He said, I'd have done it if I could. And I really, truly think that Steve Martin, if he had a good, he just had some, he could use a good actor, you know, in the movies he made, and just interested in bluegrass more than a lot of people thought. So I think if he'd had it, if he could have been the player and the singer that he wanted to be, I think he would probably stay with bluegrass instead of trying to be what he did. But like you said, he did okay with what he did.
But you know, you're right. I think if he'd had that option early, that he loves it and he loves playing. He loves banjos. He absorbs as much as he can about banjos. And I think you're probably right. Nice man. Hey, listen, yeah. I want to talk to you. I don't want to take your whole day up. I know you've got, but I want to talk to you about the current band. The Rocky Top Express a little bit. Who's going to be, when people go see you at Turfway next Friday, who are they going to see in the band?
The boy playing the guitar with me, his name is Joe Miller. He'll be playing the guitar and singing that third part with my son Bobby Osborne Jr. And he plays the bass and sings, so it's mostly singing to be taking place with me and my boy Bobby Jr. and Joe Miller. And then I've got another son in Florida that is a, you'll see when you see him, he's going to come with me. He's a great banjo player. He's right on the heels of what Sonny did and more, you know. So,
and that's Wynn?
Wynn is his name. Wynn Osborne. He wanted to stay in music and all that right there, but he got such a good deal when he got out of school with computers and got a good job in Florida. So he went there, and he's been there ever since. But he comes back during the summer, and he's working with me about all summer, so he can be with me playing the banjo. And then I have a little boy from West Virginia. His name is Buddy Griffin, and he'll be playing the fiddle.
Oh, he's great. Well, that's a great one. And I've heard nothing but good things about Wynn's playing from a lot of people, and they've all said that he could do Earl, he could do Sonny, and he could you know, combine them both, and that he was. So I'm really looking forward to seeing you and hearing you again sing, and I can't wait to. I play banjo myself for fun. And that's how I get into a lot of these messes that I get in.
Oh, you enjoy it, his playing, because he knows our songs and stuff so well. All I have to do is just turn around and say, two words of a title, and he's ready to go with it. He knows exactly how it's supposed to go, and not very many new people can do that right there, you know. But yeah, you'll sure enjoy his playing.
Hey, I had when people found out you were going to be on my show, and they're sending me messages, and I try to follow up as many things. My interviews are just kind of this real casual, but someone had a specific question. A guy from England knew you were coming on and said that he has a recording of your record, but you're a guest vocalist and you're singing. He thinks the song is "I Hear a Sweet Voice Calling," and the guy is killing himself trying to figure out. Do you remember singing as a guest on someone's album a tune entitled "I Hear a Sweet Voice Calling"?
I sung it with are you speaking of the with Monroe? That's his song, he wrote it.
Yeah, I don't know. The guy said he doesn't know what album it's on. He says it's the greatest vocal he's ever heard. Ask me to ask you. I don't normally do that, but I know this guy's in England and probably listening, and I thought his name is Kenny Baker. We're talking about odd names. His name is Kenny Baker, and he wanted to know.
Well, we did record it for CMH Records. We recorded that one time, and Kenny and Blaine Sprouse played twin fiddles on that.
Okay.
On that recording right
there.
There
you go. Well, that's the answer then. Great. Yeah. So what do you got coming down besides, I know right now you're touring and you're still very busy, and the last album on Rural Rhythm Records is this New Bluegrass and Old Heartaches, which is excellent. It's a great album. I listen to it and I think, man, there's Bobby. He's still nailing it. He's still doing what he loves to do, and you can hear it in your voice that you love doing this. You're not doing this because you feel bound to. You're really doing what you always wanted to do after you left the cab company.
I was thinking, I was telling somebody last night at Opry, lots of people and all over the world, I guess, that have to go to work every day, and they don't like what they do to make a living, you know. But I feel so fortunate and so thankful that I got to earn my living by doing what I wanted to do all my life, you know. And not very many people get that chance, I don't think, compared to the people that don't, you know. So I'm very thankful and honored to get it, to have the talent to hang in there like I have and make my living doing something that I always just loved and still do, you know.
Well, you're still going strong. Do you have any anything coming back out of the studio within a year or so you want to talk about now? Are you still in the planning stages or what?
Well, we're working on a new CD right now, and we don't have everything picked out. We're just going to be probably just a straight air style, air type of bluegrass, you know, with some new songs and maybe some standards too. So we're working on that right now, and of course another thing I got to do, and I'm on my sixth year doing that, is I teach school over in my hometown of Hyde, Kentucky, and they have a school over there for the traditional, bluegrass and traditional. It's affiliated with the college, or the Hazard Community Technical College in Hazard, and it's affiliated with that. But they chose to have the school in Hyde, in my hometown, because I was from there. So I'm an instructor there, and I just go 2 days a week. That's all I got time for.
Well, what do you teach? You're not teaching math, right? You're teaching some sort of music.
No, I'm teaching mandolin and the fiddle.
Oh, great.
And Curtis Birch teaches the guitar and dobro. And a gentleman named J.P. Mathis teaches the banjo. And we teach all the instruments, the mandolin, guitar, fiddle, banjo, and the dobro, and bass. Teach vocal, songwriting, publishing, and the history of bluegrass. I help out with the extra classes and songwriting and publishing and stuff like that. But teach everything, and of course the school is there in Hyde, and I'm on my sixth year, and I kind of enjoy it. Most kids that come there, it's what I liked about it was traditional, you know. I came in the traditional days of what we know as now as bluegrass and country music. So I've got to the point where I really enjoy it. But to take a kid that don't know a lot about the mandolin or the fiddle and and teach them to play some tunes on it. That's kind of it's a hard thing to do, but I enjoy doing that. Mm-hmm. I really do. I don't know how long I'm going to do that. I enjoy doing that. So I'm still doing that and working the road shows too.
You're still working the road shows, and Bobby's now teaching in a classroom, and the beat goes on for Bobby Osborne and that whole Osborne Brothers sound and everything that Bobby brought to it, which is historical significance and continuing to influence people, not just from hearing his music, but Bobby's now in the classroom. And do you have to grade papers?
No, I don't have to. some of the teachers do, but that part I do not have to. I give a guy a, if he can play a tune, he's passed in my book. So
All right. I would think that would be the worst part, is having to grade papers, you know? So I didn't want you to do that. Well, this is great. This has been great, Bobby. Gosh, thanks so much. I feel so honored to get a chance to speak with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Rocky Top Express next Friday, the 20th of September, out in Turfway Race. If it's nice weather, it'll be outside, which is really a nice venue, by the way.
Okay. Just for the Josh Trivette, that Moonstruck booked that for me, and I haven't got the times of our show on that. Do you have them handy there?
You know what? I had it written down on a post-it note somewhere, and which means it's probably stuck to the bottom of my shoe. It's either going to be 7 or 8. It's on. I'll tell you this: if you go to Bobby Osborne Rocky Top Express website, the show is posted there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it'll be there. So you have a website, and we'll tell everybody that now, that you can Google Bobby Osborne Rocky Top Express. It tells you what you're doing, when, and where, and that
BobbyOsborne.com.
BobbyOsborne.com. There you go.
Okay.
Oh man, thanks so much. I can't wait to meet you next Friday, and just keep doing what you're doing, man. We love it.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to do my best to.
All right, okay.
But anyway, I'll be looking forward to seeing you, Steve, and or Mr. Martin.
You call me Steve. You call the other guy Mr. Martin.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Bobby.
Thank you, sir, very much. All right. I'll see you Friday, then.
All right, I'll be there. See you, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was fun. Boy, he was right on time. There's something about those great performers, those great people who like, he's still on the road. You know, it's not an accident that they keep getting called back. They show up for shows. It's inbred into them that, you know, if you got a show at 2 o'clock, you go at 2 o'clock. If you got a problem, like all of a sudden you need to have double banjos, and the other double banjo guy dropped off of the face of the earth, what do? You still make your commitments, and Bobby learns how to play banjo. You follow through on what you've committed yourself to doing through your music and what you love to do. And I love that. I loved talking to Bobby. Never had a chance to talk to Bobby before. That was a blast. I hope you enjoyed that. We'll get that up for you soon. I know that one of my other volunteers, that there's three people that, actually more than that, but on the technical end of this, there's me talking. I have two other very good friends who go by sneaky names inside the chat room that actually do the hard work. I just have to talk and laugh and chuckle and keep things moving. So we'll get Bobby Osborne posted real fast, and I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did. That was an absolute blast. And he called right at 3 o'clock, right in the middle of Sourwood Mountain from the Osborne Brothers, which means as I click on again, we're going to get a radio drop from Sonny, and we're going to hear No Good Son of a Gun, and then Bill Monroe and Daly. There's a lot of good music coming. And probably, I would say at this point, close to 4:30, maybe 4:20, I'm going to put in the interview from Australia. So you go from right in the heart of Kentucky and bluegrass and that incredible tradition of Bobby Osborne and the Osborne Brothers, and you're going to see how that's filtered over to Melbourne, Australia today, and how the music is so alive there with Nadine Budge and the Stetson family. I hope you're enjoying your time here today. I am.